Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, President Trump's reported comments during yesterday's White House meeting about a potential immigration deal have prompted some strong reaction from around the world, including here in Massachusetts. State Senator Linda Dorsina-Forey, who's Haitian-American, calls it demoralizing and upsetting to have to express her outrage. Again, the president's comments came during a meeting about a potential deal on DACA, which stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Massachusetts Congressman Joe Kennedy III stopped by our studios today, and we asked him about the president's comments and about the immigration deal that now appears to be in limbo.
Look, this is outrageous on so many different levels. It's immoral. It's not who we are as a country. I think when we look back at some of our proudest moments as a nation, they are the ones where we aspire to live up to the words that are inscribed at the base of the Statue of Liberty. All this talk of a deal gets me a bit whipsawed back and forth, quite candidly, because this is something that, remember, President Obama created this program because we couldn't get a comprehensive immigration reform deal through a Republican-led House of Representatives. Speaker Ryan has the ability to solve this problem. Donald Trump have the ability to solve the problem. And the fact is that they're letting the futures not only of these 700,000 or so young Americans weigh in limbo, but the values that we hold as a nation to be mortgaged off for trying to fulfill a campaign promise that even Speaker Ryan said at the time, or insinuated at the time, was absurd.
You mean the campaign promise for a border wall?
For a border wall, which the debate now is, will Congress pay for this? Will taxpayers end up paying for this for a wall? And what does that wall look like? You've heard the president loop around so many different times, it's hard to understand where exactly he is. At one point, and I think again of late, was calling for an invisible wall so that border agents could see if there were folks in Mexico that were throwing bales of drugs over from a catapult, that you could see where those bales of drugs would land, because otherwise they could fall on your head and it was actually extremely dangerous. Words from the President of the United States.
This deal was included in a spending bill, which has to be approved by a week from today, right, to avoid a government shutdown. Some immigrant advocates say that if this spending bill does not include protections for young immigrants, that lawmakers are essentially voting to deport dreamers. Would you support taking any immigration deal out of the spending bill at this point to keep the government running and deal with it separately?
I think we have to be very clear about what the actual constructs of this deal are. The spending deal is actually part of a much broader discussion about the framework for our government going forward. I would have a very hard time voting for, as it's called in Washington, a CAPS deal that does not contain immigration language to solve this problem. I don't see how we should do that and how we would do that. That is potentially separate apart from, do you keep government funded on another, as they call it in Washington, bureaucratic continuing resolution? Part of what we're trying to get to is a compromise.
This deal, this bipartisan deal that you're talking about, did include some funding for border protection, a wall, invisible wall, whatever it may end up being in the future, right? Would you support that as part of a compromise?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd want to take a look at whatever that language is, but understanding that, particularly given the reality in which I serve at the moment as a Democrat in the House of Representatives, when Republicans are in charge of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, it means you're going to have to compromise. I'll obviously take a look at that language. Could I foresee supporting something that looks at, you know, additional surveillance measures, additional cameras, some sort of border security? Sure, potentially. Let's see what that actually is.
Let's talk about the tax bill. It's all sorts of estimates about what this bill is going to do for the state. What do you tell your constituents about this tax bill and specifically how Massachusetts residents should deal with it?
Look, this was a bill that was not written for Massachusetts, and Republicans are actually pretty clear on that. It was deliberately written to target states like Massachusetts. I think, again, some of them have been pretty clear that there's not a Republican representative in Massachusetts, so they didn't need to listen to our concerns. I will say that I was approached by at least one Republican this week asking if I would help sign on to a bill that they would have to try to fix some of the issues that they've recognized in their tax bill. Which,
any specification on which issue might need to be fixed?
I'll leave that off for the decency of the friend of Republican friend that came forward on it. I have a hard time swallowing the fact that this was such an important bill that was so perfect. They didn't want any sort of Democratic input 2 weeks ago. But now after it's been put in place, they realize that they don't have the luxury of a 51-vote threshold anymore, and they're going to need bipartisan support, so they want our help to fix it.
So they're reaching out to Democrats. There's a concerted effort to do this, do you think?
At least one of them did to me. Specifically on one issue that, you know, would be one. So this was the earned income tax credit and trying to bolster that, which is something that, yes, I am inclined to be supportive of. That being said, I've got communities across my district where the limits put in place for the state and local tax deduction are going to be devastating to families where they're going to be paying an awful lot more in taxes.
But the optics here, Walmart's raising wages. The stock market's doing well. Like, this is what you're going to hear from folks, because we're taking steps to really reform this onerous system and make it better for business.
So let's dive into that a bit. Undeniable that there are companies out there that have boosted up wages. Undeniable that we've seen the stock market go up. One, 50% of Americans don't own a single stock. So 80% of all stocks in this country are controlled by about 10% of American families. So if we're using the stock market as a barometer of economic well-being in this country, you're using the wrong one. Two, Walmart made some news for saying that they're going to increase parental leave, paid leave, and give a raise to their workforce. That's great. Needed to happen. Should have happened a long time ago. I applaud Walmart for doing it. They made a big press release out of that. They then closed 60 stores almost at the same time and didn't say a peep about it.
Let's look at the political landscape a little bit. More than 24 Republicans, right, are planning to leave Congress.
There's going to be individual reasons why some of those Republicans are leaving. Obviously, it creates an opportunity for Democrats. And in my conversations with a number of Republican colleagues, I think all of them know it's going to be a challenging year. All of them know that they see the popularity levels of the president. They understand that they're on the wrong side of many of the opinion polls in this country, which, Deb, I think is an interesting point just to focus on for a second. Republicans in Congress have a choice. They can either stop the track that they're on, adjust, and then govern from the middle, saying, okay, we might have overstepped on a tax bill and attempts on a healthcare repeal bill, governing from a far-right position. Let's actually govern from the center and actually try to make sure that we mitigate these losses and govern in a way that is reflective of the values and visions of the vast majority of Americans. They're not doing that, and that is a shame.
But what do the Democrats do? Because there are some mixed signals. You know, you're a member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Mm-hmm. Some say, you know what, the Democratic Party needs to go more to the left. We just heard a poll out this morning, a report out this morning saying in terms of rural voters, they think that the Democratic Party is too focused on liberal social issues and not enough on sort of meat and potato economic issues, and so therefore they're turned off by me. Where do the Democrats go? What's the strategy? What are the priorities that you think Democrats need to focus on?
So you do both. If anybody in government, and particularly Democrats, if you fall into a trap of saying you represent a progressive wing of the party or a minority wing in the inner city or Hispanics, if you choose those different constituencies, you lose. You represent everybody. You don't pick one or the other, because the fact of the matter is the challenges affecting one are almost identical to the challenges affecting all of them. Look, Democrats have, I think, a long and storied history, something to be very proud of making sure that we stand up for you no matter who you are. We got to continue to do that. What I think you also can do and what we also have to do is to recognize that in addition to standing up for those civil rights, that if you cannot provide for your family, not much else actually matters. And so in addition to making sure that we stand for you no matter who you are, it's ensuring that you have a pathway to a job that provides a roof over your head, food on your plate, your kid in a good school, and can save for your retirement. Because if you can't do that, then that is where your day begins and ends. That is your farthest horizon. And we got to make sure that there is a strong economic message tailored to this, that we are – it's not just about civil rights. It's about making sure that you can succeed in this country too.
Obviously, there's a lesson. There should be a lesson or a message from 2016, right? I mean, what happened, you know? And what are the Democrats – if you could just briefly say like a main thing that you think Democrats should take from that election to go forward.
So,
because people don't believe government, right?
Right. You have to. I think if Democrats fall into a trap of saying it's civil rights versus economic justice, we lose. It's not just a referendum on Donald Trump. Yes, in certain communities across the country, the president's not all that popular. He's not all that popular in my district. That being said, President Trump still got over 1 million votes here in Massachusetts. This is not just an issue of what happens to an economically challenged post-industrial manufacturing towns in the Midwest. This is about communities across our country that for decades have been able to provide a pathway for economic security and for a middle-class lifestyle for individuals and their families that at the moment is not viable anymore. When you turn around and look at communities like Boston or Washington, D.C. or New York or San Francisco and the number of cranes in the skylines, the booms that you're seeing, the values of the homes, it is night and day reflected as to what their own economic reality looks like. If you are a progressive, and I consider myself one, you cannot sit there and say that our version of success at the moment is Greater Boston. It just – you can't. Why? Because you can't live in the city or you can barely live in the city on $30,000 or $40,000 a year. And look, I disagree with almost every single thing the Trump administration has done. But as I talk to folks across my district and across our Commonwealth, the biggest issues that they talk about – a commuter rail system that does not work, cost of housing that just prices people out, cost of rent, mental health system that is shameful, cost of a college education. Donald Trump didn't cause any of those things. He's not solving any of them either, but he didn't cause them. So as much as there is an anger and a frustration pointed at Donald Trump, and again, there needs to be and there should be, we need to continue to resist these dangerous policies put forth by this administration. If you also can't pivot and turn back and say, some of the challenges that are affecting us here have nothing to do with him and have everything to do with our own ability here as a Commonwealth to confront these challenges, to make sure it is still viable for a middle-class family to live and call our Commonwealth of Massachusetts home, particularly within 128 and 495. Mm-hmm. That is a choice that we all can make. That has to be part of a message going forward, not just resisting Trump, but resisting the underlying – fighting against the underlying – issues that gave him an opportunity to get elected in the first place.
What about you, your political future? You have a 2-year-old and a 3-week-old. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On the 3-week-old.
And I'm drinking an awful lot of coffee.
What about your future political plans here?
My future political plans are to run for re-election in 2018. Should the voters of the 4th District of Massachusetts have me, I am looking forward to mounting a campaign over the course of the next several months and trying to make the case to folks across the district that not only am I honored to represent them, but I want to keep doing so. And I'll be spending a fair amount of time trying to take a Democratic message to some of these other seats across the country and hopefully be able to bring a voice for communities like Massachusetts, New England, and restore that voice down in Washington. Because at the moment, Republicans just – Kennedy, they're not listening, and they don't need to, and they don't want to.
All right. Congressman Joe Kennedy III represents the Massachusetts 4th District. Congressman, thanks so much for coming into our studio.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
And stay with us. Coming up, local author Mira Lee on her debut novel about families dealing with mental illness. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.